Dilov strode into the chapel, his face bright with satisfaction. One of his monks dropped an unconscious Raoden next to the far wall.
This, my dear Raven, is how you deal with heretics.
You are massacring the entire town, Dilov. What is the point? Where is the glory for Yaldith in this?
Do not question me!
Raven turned away. Of all the titles in the hierarchy of the Dorethi Church, only two outranked Giorn, Wern and Grozdet, leader of a monastery. The Grozdets were usually discounted, for they generally had little to do with the world outside their monasteries.
Apparently, things change.
Raythan ran his eyes over Dilof's bare chest, seeing the twisted patterns that had always been hiding beneath the Arteth's robes. Raythan's stomach turned at the lines and curves that ran like varicose veins beneath the man's skin. It was bone, Raythan knew. Hard, unyielding bone. Dilov wasn't just a monk, and he wasn't just a Grozdet. He was monk and Grozdet of the most infamous monastery in Fjordan, Dachor, the Order of Bone. The prayers and incantations used to create Dachor monks were secret. Even the Giorns didn't know them. A few months after a boy was initiated into the Dachor Order, his bones started to grow and twist, adopting strange patterns like those visible beneath Dilov's skin. Somehow, each of those patterns gave its bearer abilities, such as heightened speed and strength. Horrible images washed through Raythan's mind. Images of priests chanting over him. Memories of an awesome pain rising within. The pain of his bones reshaping. It had been too much. The darkness, the screams, the torment. Raythan had left after just a few months to join a different monastery.
So, you were a Fjordal all this time.
You never suspected, did you? You should have realized. It is far easier to imitate an Aureline-speaking Fjordel than it is for an actual man of Aurelan to learn the holy language so perfectly.
Raythan bowed his head. His duty was clear. Dilov was his superior. He didn't know how long Dilov had been in Aurelan. The Dachor lived unusually long lives, but it was obvious that Dilov had been planning Kaye's destruction for a very long time.
Oh, Raven, you never did understand your place, did you? Wern didn't send you to convert Aurelan. Yes, I know of your orders, Giorn. Reread that letter sometime. Wern didn't send you to Aurelan to convert. He sent you to inform the people of their impending destruction. You were a distraction. Something for people like Evanteo to focus their attention on while I prepared for the city's invasion. You did your job perfectly.
Distraction? But the people...
were never to be saved, Raythan. Wern always intended to destroy Aurelan. He needs such a victory to ensure his grip on the other countries. Despite your efforts, our control of Dúladel is tenuous. The world needs to know what happens to those who blaspheme against Yardeth.
These people don't blaspheme. They don't even know Yardeth. How can we expect them to be righteous if we don't give them a chance to convert?
You forget to whom you speak, Giorn. This people is unholy. Only Aurelines and Teos can become Elantrians. If we destroy them, then we end the heresy of Elantris forever!
You will slaughter them all? You would murder an entire nation of people?
It is the only way to be certain.
Raoden awoke to new pains. The sharpest was at the back of his head, but there were others. Scratches, bruises, and cuts across his entire body. For a moment, it was almost too much. Each wound stung sharply. Never deadening, never weakening. Fortunately, he had spent weeks dealing with the door's all-powerful attacks. compared to those crushing moments of agony. The regular pains of his body, no matter how severe, seemed weaker.
Wake up, you Elantrian!
Riordan raised his head, blinking confused eyes. It was still night, and he could smell the thick scent of smoke. They were at the base of a hill, Kyian's Hill. The blockish house stood only a few yards away, but he could barely make it out. His vision swam, everything blurry.
Merciful Dolmai, let Serini be safe.
I know you can hear me, Princess. Look who I have here. Let us make a deal.
No!
The blow to his head had done something to his brain. He could barely keep himself upright, let alone speak. The worst part was, he knew it would never improve. He could not heal. Now that the dizziness had come upon him, it would never leave.
Look who I have here! Let us make a deal.
You realize that there is no dealing with him?
Kyian and Serini watched Dilof and the staggering Riordan through one of Kyian's slit-like windows. Serini nodded quietly, feeling chill. Riordan wasn't doing well. He wobbled as he stood, looking disoriented in the firelight.
Merciful Dolmai, what have they done to him?
Don't look, Eni.
I can't look away. I have to at least speak to him to say goodbye.
All right. Let's go to the roof. At the first sign of bows, however, we're locking ourselves back in.
Serini nodded solemnly as the two climbed the steps up onto the roof. Serini approached the roof's ledge, looking down at Dilof and Riordan. If she could convince the priest to take her in exchange for Riordan, she would do it. However, she suspected that Dilof would demand the entire household, and Serini could never agree to such a thing. Deora and the children huddled in the basement under Lukel's care. Serini would not betray them, no matter whom Dilof held hostage. She opened her mouth to speak, knowing that her words would probably be the last Riordan ever heard.
Go!
The Dakor monks sprang forward, jumping from hiding places along the base of the building. They leapt to the walls, their feet seeming to stick as they found tiny footholds between bricks and arrow slits. Several monks, already in place, hanging from the back of the rooftop, swung up and cut off Serini's escape.
Serini, no!
It was too late. A few moments later, a Dakor jumped down from the rooftop, a struggling princess in his arms.
Raven, get me your Sayam! Sayam, I wish to speak with King Evanteo.
Soon its light molded into the head of an overweight man with a proud face.
I do not know you. Who calls for me in the middle of the night?
I am the man who has your daughter, King.
Dilof prodded Serini in the side.
Who are you?
I am Dilof, Grazdet of the Dakor Monastery.
Merciful Dolmai.
I thought you had converted Evanteo. No matter. Wake your soldiers and gather them on their ships. I will arrive in Teod 1 hour from now. And if they are not ready to present a formal surrender, I will kill the girl.
Father, no! He can't be trusted!
Serini?
1 hour, Evanteo.
Then Dilof swiped his hand in the air dismissively. The king's confused face melted back into the smooth spherical shape of a Saeon.
You will kill the Taos as well?
No. Others will perform those executions. I will just kill their king, then burn Taos' ships with the sailors still on them. Once the armada is gone, Wern can land his armies on Teod's shore and use the country as a battleground to prove his might.
No!
It is unnecessary, you know. I had him. Even Teo was mine.
He might have converted, Raven. But you are simple-minded if you think he would have allowed our troops to land on his soil.
You are a monster. You will slaughter two kingdoms to feed your paranoia? What happened to make you hate Elantris so much?
Enough! Do not think I won't hesitate to kill you, Giord. The Dakor are outside the law.
Serini.
The still disoriented Riordan was stumbling toward his wife, who was being held by a quiet Dakor. The prince reached out to her, his arm wavering.
Oh, I forgot about you.
The agony was unimaginable, even for one whose pain had been building steadily for 2 months. He held his stomach with trembling hands. He could feel the door. It felt close. It was too much. The woman he loved was in danger, and he could do nothing. The pain, the door, his failure. The soul that was Brayoden crumpled beneath their combined weight. After that, for there was no longer self, there was nothing.
Brayoden!
Serini could see the suffering in his face, and she felt the sword as if it had been run through her own stomach.
Bring her!
And the others?
Gather them with the rest of the people in this accursed town and take them into Elantris. You will find the Elantrians near the center of the city, in a place that seems more cleanly.
We have found them, my Grajdit. Our men have already attacked.
Ah, good. Make certain you gather their bodies. Elantrians do not die as easily as normal men, and we do not want to let any of them escape.
Yes, my Grajdit.
When you have them all in one place, bodies, Elantrians, and future Elantrians, say the purification rites, then burn them all.
Yes, my Grajdit.
Come, Raven. You will accompany me to Teod.
Serini fell into a disbelieving stupor as they pulled her away, watching Raoden until his slumped form was no longer visible in the night. Galadon hid in the shadows, careful not to move until the Giorn and his strange bare-chested companions were gone. Then, motioning to Kurete, he crept up to Raoden's body.
Sul!
Hail!
Dolakan Sul! Don't do this to me!
Raoden had joined the Hoheed. The last hour had been a horror. Galadon and Kurete had been at the library, planning how to lead the people away from Elantris. They had heard the screams even at that distance, but by the time they had arrived at New Elantris, no one but Hoheed remained. As far as he knew, he and Kurete were the last two conscious Elantrians. Kurete placed a hand on his shoulder.
Galadon, we should go. This place is not safe.
No.
Galadon rose to his feet.
I have a promise to keep.
He looked up at the mountain slope just outside of Kaye, a slope that held a special pool of water. Then, reaching down, he tied his jacket around Raoden to cover the wound and hefted his friend up onto his shoulder.
Raoden made me vow to give him peace. After I see to him, I intend to do the same for myself. We are the last, Kurete. There is no more room for us in this world.
Lucel didn't struggle. There was little use in it. His father, however, was a different story. Kaiayan raged against the soldiers that sought to capture him. Eventually, one of the soldiers thought to smash him on the back of the skull with a rock.
Kaiayan, no! Leave him be, you fools!
The soldiers paid no attention to Deora as they heaved Kaiayan's bulk onto a waiting horse. Lucel held his mother and wife close as the warriors herded them toward Elantris. There was a long line of people. Nobles gathered from the corners of Kaye, their clothing and faces ragged. Soldiers kept a watchful eye on the captives, as if any of them had the courage or will left to try escaping. Most of the people didn't even look up as they were pushed through the streets. Kaeys and Deorn clung to Lucel, wide-eyed and frightened. Lucel pitied them the most for their youth. Adayan walked along behind him, apparently unconcerned. He slowly counted the steps as he moved.
357.
Lucel knew that they were marching to their own execution.
300.
He saw the bodies that lined the streets, and he understood that these men were not intent on domination. They were here to commit a massacre, and no massacre would be complete with victims left alive. He considered fighting back, grabbing a sword in some hopeless feat of heroism. But in the end, he simply plodded along with the others. He knew that he was going to die, and he knew there was nothing he could do to stop it. He was no warrior. The best he could hope for was a quick end. Brayton stood next to Dilof, remaining perfectly still as instructed. They stood in a circle, 50 Dekor, Serini, and Brayton, with one solitary monk in the center. The Dekor raised their hands, and the men on either side of Brayton placed a hand on his shoulder. His heart began to pound as the monks began to glow, the bone inscriptions beneath their skin shining. There was a jarring sensation, and Kei vanished around them. They reappeared in an unfamiliar city. The houses lining the nearby street were tall and connected, rather than separated and squat like those of Kei. They had arrived in Teod. The group still stood in a circle, but Raythan did not fail to notice that the man in the center was now missing. Raythan shuddered, images from his youth returning. The monk in the center had been fuel. His flesh and soul burned away, a sacrifice in return for the instantaneous transportation to Teod. Dilof stepped forward, leading his men up the street. As far as Raythan could tell, Dilof had brought the bulk of his monks with him, leaving Aerilon in the care of regular Fjordel soldiers and a few Dekor overseers. Aerilon and Elantris had been defeated. The next battle was Teod. Brayton could tell from Dilof's eyes that the monk would not be satisfied until every person of Aeonic descent was dead. Dilof chose a building with a flat roof and motioned for his men to climb. It was easy for them. Their enhanced strength and agility helped them leap and scramble up surfaces no normal man could possibly scale. Brayton felt himself lifted and thrown over a monk's shoulder, and the ground fell away as he was carted up the side of the wall. The monk dropped Brayton unceremoniously on the roof. As Brayton pulled himself to his feet, his eyes found those of the princess. Serini's face was a tempest of hatred. She blamed him, of course. She didn't realize that, in a way, Brayton was as much a prisoner as she. Dilof stood at the edge of the roof, scanning the city. A fleet of ships was pulling into Teod's enormous bay.
We are early. We will wait.
Galadon could almost imagine that the city was peaceful. He stood on a mountainside boulder, watching the morning's light creep across Kei, as if an invisible hand were pulling back a dark shade. He could almost convince himself that the rising smoke was coming from chimneys, not the ashen wrecks of buildings. He could nearly believe that the specks lining the streets were not bodies, but bushes or boxes. The crimson blood on the streets, a trick of the early sunlight. Galadon turned away from the city. Kei might be peaceful, but it was the peace of death, not of serenity. Dreaming otherwise did little good. Perhaps, if he had been less inclined to delusion, he wouldn't have let Raoden pull him out of Elantris' gutters. He wouldn't have allowed one man's simplistic optimism to cloud his mind. He wouldn't have begun to believe that life in Elantris could be anything but pain. He wouldn't have dared to hope. Unfortunately, he had listened. He had allowed himself to give in to Raoden's dreams. Once, he thought that he could no longer feel hope. He'd chased it far away, wary of its fickle tricks. He should have left it there. Without hope, he wouldn't have to worry about disappointment.
Dorlakhan Sul, you certainly made a mess of me.
The worst of it was, he still hoped. The light that Raoden had kindled still flickered inside Galadon's chest, no matter how hard he tried to stomp it out. The images of New Elantris' destruction were still crisp in his memory. Mary Shay, an enormous, ragged hole torn in his chest. The quiet craftsman Tayane, his face crushed beneath a large stone, but his fingers still twitching. The old Kaehaer, who had cleaned all of New Elantris practically by himself, missing an arm and both legs. Galadon had stood amid the carnage, screaming at Raeodin for abandoning them, for leaving them behind. Their prince had betrayed them for Serini. And still, he hoped.
You know better, Galadon.
Yet, he hoped. A part of Galadon still believed that Raeodin would somehow make things better.
This is a foul curse you have sent upon me, King Raeodin. The wicked seed of optimism that refuses to be uprooted.
Silently, Galadon nodded to Karete, and they picked Raeodin up, ready to trek the last short distance to the pond. In a few minutes, he would be rid of both hope and despair. Elantris was dark, even though dawn was breaking. The tall walls made a shadow, keeping the sunlight out, expanding the night for a few moments. It was here, at one side of the broad entry plaza, that the soldiers deposited Lucel and the other nobles. Another group of Fjordales was building an enormous pile of wood, hauling scraps of building and furniture into the city. Surprisingly, there were very few of the strange demon warriors. Only three directed the work. The rest of the men were regular soldiers, their armor covered with red surcoats, marking them as Dorethi monks. They worked quickly, keeping their eyes off of their prisoners, apparently trying not to think too hard about what the wood would be used for. Lucel tried not to think about that either. Yala pulled close to him, her body trembling with fright. Only Adayan stood apart, staring at the pile of lumber.
7,000 steps yet.
Lucel searched through the crowd of nobles, trying to smile and give encouragement, though he himself felt little confidence. Elantris would be their grave. As he looked, Lucel noticed a figure standing near the back of the group, hidden by bodies. He was moving slowly, his hands waving in front of himself.
Shuden?
The Jindo's eyes were closed, his hands moving fluidly in some sort of pattern. Lucel watched his friend with confusion, wondering if the Jindo's mind had snapped. Then he remembered the strange dance that Shuden had done that first day in Serini's fencing class.
Che Shan.
Shuden moved his hands slowly, giving only a bare hint of the fury that was to come. Lucel watched with growing determination, somehow understanding. Shuden was no warrior. He practiced his dance for exercise, not for combat. However, he was not going to let the ones he loved be murdered without some sort of fight. He would rather die struggling than sit and wait, hoping that fate would send them a miracle.
If he can do it, so can I.
Lucel searched around him, his eyes finding a table leg that one of the soldiers had dropped nearby. When the time came, Shuden would not fight alone. Raeodin floated, senseless and unaware. Time meant nothing to him. He was time. It was his essence. Occasionally, he would bob toward the surface of what he had once called consciousness. But as he approached, he would feel pain and back away. The agony was like a lake's surface. If he broke through it, the pain would return and envelop him. Those times he got close to the surface of pain, however, he thought he saw images, visions that might have been real, but were probably just reflections of his memory. He saw Galadon's face, concerned and angry at the same time. He saw Karete, her eyes heavy with despair. He saw a mountain landscape covered with scrub and rocks. It was all immaterial to him.
I often wish they'd just let her die.
Raythan looked up. Diloph's eyes were focused squarely on him.
What? If only they had let her die.
Diloph sat at the edge of the rooftop, watching the ships gather below, his face reminiscent.
I was already 50 years old back then, Raythan. Did you know that? I have lived nearly 70 years, though my body doesn't look older than 20. She thought I was the most handsome man she'd ever seen.
even though my body had been twisted and destroyed to fit the mold of an Aureline. When she fell sick, I took her to Elantris. I knew it was pagan. I knew it was blasphemous. But even 40 years as a decor wasn't enough to keep me away. Not when I thought Elantris could save her. Elantris can heal, they said, while decor cannot. And I took her. They changed her. They said the spell went wrong, but I know the truth. They knew me, and they hated me. Why, then, did they have to put their curse on Ciela? Her skin turned black. Her hair fell out, and she began to die. She screamed at night, yelling that the pain was eating her from the inside. Eventually, she threw herself off the city wall. I found her at the bottom, still alive. Still alive, despite the fall. And I burned her. She never stopped screaming. She screams still. I can hear her. She will scream until Elantris is gone.
Once the wood was gathered, the soldiers began a new pile. This one, of bodies. The soldiers went searching through the city, seeking the corpses of Elantrians who had been slain. Lucal realized something as he watched the pile grow. They weren't all dead. In fact, most of them weren't. Most of them had wounds so grievous that it sickened Lucal to look at them, yet their arms and legs twitched, their lips moving. There were hundreds of them, all of the Elantrians that had been collecting in the city for 10 years. None of them resisted. They simply allowed themselves to be heaped, their eyes uncaring, until the pile of bodies was larger than the pile of wood.
27 steps to the bodies.
Edayan walked away from the crowd of nobles.
Edayan, no!
Lucal reached for his brother, but it was too late.
Get back in line!
There are 27 steps to the bodies.
I said get back!
Go, take my 20.
The sword left a large gash in his chest. Edayan stumbled, but kept walking. No blood came from the wound.
What? That can't be! You demon!
The soldier jumped back, making a ward against evil. Edayan approached the pile of Elantrians and joined its rank, flopping down among them and then lying still. Edayan's secret of 5 years had finally been revealed. He had joined his people.
I remember you, Wraithen. I remember you as a boy when you came to us. It was just before I left for Aerilon. You were frightened then, as you are frightened now. You ran from us, and I watched you go with satisfaction. You were never meant to be Decor. You are far too weak.
You were there?
I was Grashdet by then, Wraithen. Do you remember me?
Wraithen looked into the man's eyes. Wraithen had a flash of remembrance. He remembered evil eyes in the body of a tall, unmerciful man. He remembered chants. He remembered fires. He remembered screams. His screams, and a face hanging above him. They were the same eyes.
God. You.
You remember.
I remember. You were the one that convinced me to leave. In my third month, you demanded that one of your monks use his magic and send you to Wyrn's palace. The monk complied, giving up his life to transport you a distance that you could have walked in 15 minutes.
Absolute obedience is required, Wraithen. Occasional tests and examples bring loyalty from the rest.
Then, pausing, Diloph looked out over the bay. The armada was docked, waiting as per Diloph's order. Wraithen scanned the horizon, and he could see several dark specks, the tips of masts. Wyrn's army was coming.
Come. We have been successful. The Teoish armada has docked. They will not be able to stop our fleet from landing. I have only one duty remaining. The death of King Evanteo.
A vision sprung into Raoden's impassive mind. He tried to ignore it, yet for some reason it refused to leave. He saw it through the shimmering surface of his pain. A simple picture. It was Aeon Rao. A large square with four circles around it, lines connecting them to the center. It was a widely used Aeon, especially among the Karathi, for its meaning was spirit, soul. Floating in the white eternity, Raoden's mind tried to discard the image of Aeon Rao. It was something from a previous existence, unimportant and forgotten. He didn't need it any longer. Yet even as he strove to remove the image, another sprung up in its place. Elantris. Four walls forming a square. The four outer cities surrounding it, their borders circles. A straight road leading from each city to Elantris.
Merciful Domai!
The soldiers opened several barrels of oil, and Lucal watched with revulsion as they began pouring them over the heap of bodies.
We will be next.
Lucal turned to his family.
Don't look.
The family turned away as the soldiers prepared Elantris for immolation. King Evanteo stood in the distance, a small honor guard surrounding him. He bowed his head as Diloph approached. The monk smiled, preparing his knife. Evanteo, though he was presenting his country for surrender, didn't realize that he was offering it up for a sacrifice. Braithen walked beside Diloph, thinking about necessity and duty. Men would die, true, but their loss would not be meaningless. The entire Fjordal Empire would grow stronger for the victory over Teod. The hearts of men would increase in faith. It was the same thing Braithen himself had done in Aerilon. He had tried to convert the people for political reasons, using politics and popularity. He had bribed Telrai to convert, giving no heed to saving the man's soul.
It's the same thing. What is a nation of unbelievers when compared with all of Shuderith?
Yet, even as he rationalized, his stomach grew sick.
I was sent to save these people, not to slaughter them.
Diloph held Princess Serini by the neck, her mouth gagged. Evanteo looked up and smiled reassuringly as they approached. He could not see the knife in Diloph's hand.
I have waited for this.
At first, Raithen thought the priest referred to the destruction of Teod. But Diloph wasn't looking at the king. He was looking at Serini. The blade of his knife pressed into her back.
You, princess, are a disease. Before you came to Kaidi, even the Aerilines hated Elantris. You are the reason they forgot that loathing. You associated with the unholy ones, and you even descended to their level. You are worse than they are. You are one who is not cursed, but seeks to be cursed. I considered killing your father first and making you watch, but now I realize it would be much worse the other way around. Think of old Evanteo watching you die, princess. Ponder that image as I send you back to your death's eternal pits of torment.
The pain hit him like an enormous block of stone, halting his progress, his mind recoiling in agony. He threw himself against it, and the torment washed over him. He slowly forced his way through the resistance surface, coming to a laborious awareness of the world outside himself. The pain was incredible. However, with the pain, he felt something else. His body. He was moving, being dragged along the ground. Images washed into his mind as sight returned. He was being pulled towards something round and blue. The pool.
No! Not yet! I know the answer!
Caladon was so surprised by Raoden that he dropped his body. Raoden stumbled forward, trying to get his footing, and fell directly into the pool. Dilaf reached around the princess to press his dagger against her neck. Eventeo's eyes opened wide with horror. Raythan watched the dagger begin to slice Serini's skin. He thought of Fjordin. He thought of the work he had done, the people he had saved. He thought of a young boy, eager to prove his faith by entering the priesthood.
No!
Dilaf stumbled for a moment, lowering his weapon in surprise. Then the monk looked up with rage and plunged the dagger at Raythan's breast. Dilaf regarded the breastplate with stunned eyes.
But that armor is just for show.
You should know by now, Dilaf. Nothing I do is just for show.
Dilaf fell, and Raythan pulled the monk's sword free from its scabbard.
Launch your ships, Eventail. Thurden's armies come not to dominate, but to massacre. Move now if you want to save your people.
Domai, my daughter.
I will help save the girl. Save your kingdom, you fool.
The king looked Raythan in the eyes for a moment, then gave him a quick, solemn nod. Eventail rushed off to order the mobilizing of Teod's armada. Though Dakor bodies were unnaturally quick, their minds recovered from shock no more quickly than those of regular men. Their surprise bought Raythan a few vital seconds. He shoved Serini toward an alleyway and backed up to block the entrance. The water held Raoden in a cool embrace. It was a thing alive.
Come, I give you a release.
It was a comforting parent. It wanted to take away his pain and sorrows, just as his mother had once done.
Come to me. You may finally cast off mortal coils.
No! Not yet!
The Fjordelves finished dousing the Elantrians with oil, then prepared their torches. During the entire process, Shuden moved his arms in restrained circular patterns, not increasing their speed as he had the time at fencing class. Lucal began to wonder if Shuden wasn't planning an assault at all, but simply preparing himself for the inevitable. Then Shuden burst into motion. The young Baron snapped forward, spinning like a dancer as he brought his fist around, driving it into the chest of a Dakor warrior monk. Shuden spun again, slapping the monk across the face. The demon's head spun completely around, and Shuden did it all with his eyes closed. Lukel couldn't be certain, but he thought he saw something else, a slight glow following Shuden's movements in the dawn shadows. Lukel grabbed the table leg and swung it at a soldier. Now Lukel had a sword. He only wished he knew how to use it. The Dakor were faster, stronger, and tougher, but Raythan was more determined. For the first time in years, his heart and his mind agreed. He felt power, the same strength he had felt that first day when he arrived in Averlon, confident in his ability to save its people. He held them off, though just barely. Raythan might not have been a Dakor monk, but he was a master swordsman. What he lacked in comparative strength and speed, he could compensate for in skill. The blade slid past enlarged ribs, piercing the heart. Raythan felt Serini stumbling behind him, pulling off her gag.
There are too many! You can't fight them all!
She was right. Fortunately, a wave moved through the crowd of warriors. Eventail's honor guard had joined the fray.
Come on!
Serini tugged his shoulder. Raythan risked a glance behind him. The princess was pointing to a slightly ajar door in the building next to them. Raythan nodded and turned to run. Galadon and Karate jumped back in surprise. Raoden felt the cool blue liquid streaming from his face. It wasn't water, but something else. something thicker. He paid it little heed as he crawled from the pool. Raoden shook his head, unable to respond. They had expected him to dissolve. They didn't understand that the pool couldn't take him unless he wanted it to.
Come.
Despite Lukel's energetic assault and Shuden's powerful attack, the other townspeople simply stood and watched in dumb stupefaction. Lukel found himself desperately fighting three soldiers. The only reason he stayed alive was because he did more dodging and running than actual attacking. When aid finally did come, it was given by an odd source. The women. Several of Serini's fencers snatched up pieces of wood or fallen swords and fell in behind Lukel, thrusting with more control and ability than he could ever feign to know. The brunt of their onslaught was pushed forward by surprise, and for a moment, Lukel thought they might actually break free. Then Shuden fell, crying out as a sword bit into his arm. As soon as the Jindo's concentration broke, so did his war dance, and a simple club to the head knocked him from the battle. The old queen, Ishain, fell next. After witnessing that horrible sight, the women broke, dropping their weapons. Lukel took a long gash on the thigh. Raoden dashed down the side of the mountain at a horrifying pace. The prince leapt and scrambled as if he hadn't been practically comatose just a few minutes earlier.
Dormakin!
Galadon tried his best to keep up. At this rate, they would reach Kaei in a matter of minutes. Serini hid beside her unlikely rescuer, holding perfectly still in the darkness. Raythan looked up through the floorboards. He had been the one to spot the cellar door, pulling it open and shoving her through. Underneath, they had found a terrified family huddled in the blackness. They had all waited quietly, tense, as the decor moved through the house, then left out the front door.
Let's go.
Raythan reached up and undid the latch to the trap door. Raythan peeked cautiously into the room. He motioned for Serini to follow, then moved into the small kitchen at the back of the house. Raythan began pulling off his armor, dropping its pieces to the floor. Though he gave no explanation, Serini understood the action. The blood-red Giorn's armor was far too distinctive to be worth its protective value.
You've been walking around all these months in real armor? Wasn't that difficult?
The burden of my calling. A calling I no longer deserve.
Raythan pulled off his bulky cotton underclothing, meant to cushion the armor. He stood bare-chested, wearing only a pair of thin, knee-length trousers and a long, sleeve-like band of cloth around his right arm.
Why did you do it, Raythan? Why turn against your people?
Dilov's actions are evil.
But your faith...
My faith is in Yadith, a god who wants the devotion of men. A massacre does not serve him.
Wern seems to think differently.
Raythan did not respond. Instead, selecting a cloak from a nearby chest, he handed it to her, then took another for himself.
Let us go.
Raoden's feet were so covered with bumps, lacerations, and scrapes that he no longer related to them as pieces of flesh. They were simply lumps of pain burning at the end of his legs. But still, he ran on. He knew that if he stopped, the pain would claim him once again. He wasn't truly free. His mind was on loan, returned from the void to perform a single task. When he was finished, the white nothingness would suck him down into its oblivion again. He stumbled toward the city of Kaei, feeling as much as seeing his way. Lukel lay dazed as Yala pulled him back toward the mass of terrified townspeople. His leg throbbed, and he could feel his body weakening as blood spilled from the long gash. His wife bound it as best she could, but Lukel knew that the action was pointless. Even if she did manage to stop the bleeding, the soldiers were only going to kill them in a few moments anyway. He watched in despair as one of the bare-chested warriors tossed a torch onto the pile of Elantrians. The demon man nodded to several soldiers who pulled out their weapons and grimly advanced on the huddled townspeople.
What is he doing?
Karete and Galadon reached the bottom of the slope. Raoden was still ahead of them, running in an unsteady gait toward Kei's short border wall.
I don't know.
Ahead, Raoden grabbed a long stick from the ground, dragging the length of wood behind him.
Whatever it is, Karete, it is important. We must see that he finishes.
The pair followed the prince along his path. After a few minutes, Karete pointed ahead of him.
There!
A squad of six Fjordal guards, probably searching the city for stragglers, walked along the inside of KE's border wall. The lead soldier noticed Raoden and raised a hand.
Come on! No matter what else happens, Karete, don't let them stop him!
Raoden barely heard the men approaching, and he only briefly recognized Galadon and Karete running up behind him, desperately throwing themselves at the soldiers. A voice in the back of his head warned Raoden that they would not be able to win him much time. Raoden continued to run, the stick held in rigid fingers. He wasn't sure how he knew he was in the right place, but he did. He felt it.
Only a little farther. Only a little farther.
Raoden crawled like a child as he dug his line in the ground.
Only a little farther.
Raoden looked up as he neared the end of his drawing. A soldier finished the swing that separated Karete's beleaguered head from her body. Galadon fell with a pair of swords in his stomach. A soldier pointed at Raoden. Raoden gritted his teeth and finished his line in the dirt. Light exploded from the ground. It burst from the dirt like a silver river, spraying into the air along the line Raoden had drawn. The light enveloped him. But it was more than just light. It was essential purity. Power refined. The door. It washed over him, covering him like a warm liquid. And for the first time in 2 months, the pain went away. The light continued along Raoden's line, which connected to KE's short border wall. It followed the wall, spurting from the ground, continuing in a circle until it completely surrounded KE. It didn't stop. The power shot up the short road between KE and Elantris, spreading to coat the great city's wall as well. From Elantris, it moved to the other three outer cities, their rubble all but forgotten in the 10 years since the Rio. Soon, all five cities were outlined with light. Five resplendent pillars of energy. The city complex was an enormous aeon. A focus for Elantrian power. All it had needed was the chasm line to make it begin working again. One square, four circles. Aeon Rayo. The spirit of Elantris. Raoden stood in the torrent of light, his clothing fluttering in its unique power. He felt his strength return, his pains evaporate like unimportant memories, and his wounds heal. He didn't need to look to know that soft white hair had grown from his scalp, that his skin had discarded its sickly taint in favor of a delicate silver sheen. Then he experienced the most joyful event of all. Raoden's heart began to beat in his chest. The Sheod, the transformation, had finally completed its work. Raoden stepped from the light, emerging into the world as a metamorphosed creature. Galadon, stunned, rose from the ground a few feet away, his skin a dark metallic silver. The terrified soldier stumbled away.
You have won out.
Raoden raised a glowing finger toward the docks.
Go!
Lukel clutched his wife, watching the fire consume its living fuel.
I love you, Yala. Know that. I will always love you.
The soldiers advanced to do their grisly work. Then, like a lantern suddenly set aflame, Elantris erupted with light. The entire entire city shook, its walls seeming to stretch, distorted by some awesome power. The people inside were trapped in a vortex of energy, sudden winds ripping through the town. They stood as if at the eye of an enormous white storm, power raging in a wall of luster that surrounded the city. Everyone looked up at the shining walls with confusion. Lucal wasn't watching the walls. His mouth opened slightly in amazement as he stared at the pyre of corpses and the shadows moving within it. Slowly, their bodies glistening with a light more luminous and more powerful than the flames around them, the Elantrians began to step from the blaze, unharmed by its heat. The townspeople sat stunned. Only the two demon priests seemed capable of motion.
Foul beasts!
One of them dashed at the emerging Elantrians with his sword upraised. Lucal turned bewildered eyes toward the source of the blast. Riodin stood in the still open gate of Elantris, his hand upraised. The king glowed like a specter returned from the grave, his skin silver, his hair a brilliant white, his face full of triumph. Riodin raised a hand, quickly sketching in the air, his fingers leaving gleaming white trails. Trails that shone with the same raging power that surrounded Elantris' wall. Riodin stopped, his hand poised next to the gleaming character. Aeon Deae, the Aeon for power. The king looked through the glowing symbol, his eyes raised in a challenge to the lone Dorethi warrior. The monk slowly lowered his weapon.
Take your men, monk. Board those ships and go. Anything Dorethi, man or vessel, that remains in my country after the next hour's chime will suffer the force of my rage. I dare you to leave me with a suitable target.
The soldiers were already running, dashing past Riodin into the city. Their leader slunk behind them. Before Rayodin's glory, the monk's horrible body seemed more pitiful than it did terrifying. Riodin watched them go, then he turned toward Lucal and the others.
People of Aerilon! Elantris is restored!
Dilov tenderly prodded at his shattered nose, resisting the urge to bellow in pain. His men, the Dakor, waited beside him. They had easily slain the king's guards, but in the combat, they had somehow lost not only Aventeo and the princess, but the traitor Hraithin as well.
Find them!
Aventeo would never launch his ships in time. Besides, 50 Dakor already roamed his capital. The monks themselves were like an army, each one as powerful as 100 normal men. They would take Teod yet. Serini and Hraithin shambled down the city street, their nondescript cloaks pulled close. Hraithin kept his hood up to hide his dark hair. The people of Teod had gathered in the streets, wondering why their king had brought the armada into the bay. Many wandered in the direction of the docks, and with these, Serini and Hraithin mingled, stooped and subservient, trying their best to look commonplace.
When we arrive, we will seek passage on one of the merchant ships. They will board from Teod as soon as the armada launches. There are several places in Hravel that don't see a Dorethi priest for months at a time. We can hide there.
You talk as if Teod will fall. You may go, priest, but I will not leave my homeland.
If you value its safety, you will. I know, Dilaf. He is a man obsessed. If you stay in Teod, so will he. If you leave, perhaps he will follow.
Serini ground her teeth. The Giorn's words had apparent sense in them, but it was possible he was concocting things to get her to accompany him. Of course, there was no reason for him to do such a thing. What cared he for Serini? She had been his fervent enemy.
You didn't really answer my question before, priest. You have turned against your religion. Why?
I don't know, woman. I have followed you there since I was a child. The structure and formality of it have always called to me. I joined the priesthood. I thought I had faith. It turned out, however, that the thing I grew to believe was not Shudareth after all. I don't know what it is.
Shu-Korath.
That is too simple. Belief is not simply Karathi or Dorethi. One or the other. I still believe Doreth's teachings. My problem is with Wirin, not God.
Horrified at his show of weakness before the girl, Hraithun quickly steeled his heart against further questions. Yes, he had betrayed Shu-Dareth. Yes, he was a traitor. But for some reason, he felt calm now that he had made the decision. He had caused blood and death in Dúladel. He would not let that happen again. He had convinced himself that the Republic's fall was a necessary tragedy. Now, he had dispelled that illusion. His work in Dúladel had been no more ethical than what Diloph had attempted here in Teod. Ironically, by opening himself to the truth, Hraithun had also exposed himself to the guilt of his past atrocities. One thing, however, kept him from despair. The knowledge that whatever else happened to him, no matter what he had done, he could say that he now followed the truth in his heart. He could die and face Yadeth with courage and pride. There was a sudden stab of pain in his chest. His fingers were stained with blood. He felt his feet weaken, and he slumped against a building.
Hraithun, what's wrong?
Confused, Hraithun looked out into the crowd, and his eyes fell on the face of his murderer.
Fionn!
The priest Hraithun had sent home from Kaï the very day he had arrived.
How? It's impossible.
Fionn disappeared into the throng of people. As the darkness closed in, Hraithun discarded all questions. Instead, his view and consciousness was filled with Serini's worried face. The woman who had destroyed him. Because of her, he had finally rejected the lies he had believed all his life. She would never know that he had come to love her.
Goodbye, my princess. Yadith, be merciful to my soul. I only did the best I could.
Serini watched the light fading from Hraithun's eyes.
No.
Serini pressed her hand against his wound in a futile attempt to stop the blood.
Hraithun, don't you dare leave me alone here!
She had fought with him over the fate of two countries, but had never really known who he was. She never would. People gathered around her, upset by the sight of a dying man in the street. Stunned, Serini realized she had become the center of attention. She lifted her hand, pulled away as if to hide, but it was too late. Several bare-chested forms appeared from an alley to investigate the disturbance. One of them had blood on his face, the sign of a broken nose. Fionn slipped away from the crowd, exulting at the ease of his first kill. They had told him that it would be simple. He only needed to knife a single man, and then he would be admitted into the monastery of Rathbor, where he would be trained as an assassin. How ironic that the man he had been ordered to kill had turned out to be Hraithun himself.
How had Wern known that Fionn would find Hraithun here? On the streets of Teod, of all places.
Fionn would probably never know. Lord Yadeth moved in ways beyond the understanding of men. But Fionn had performed his duty. His period of penance was over. With a merry step, Fionn went back to his inn and ordered breakfast.
No, leave me be. I'm dying. See to the others.
Stop whining.
Raoden drew Aeon-Ain in the air above the wounded Lucel. He crossed it with the chasm line, and the wound in the merchant's leg resealed instantly. Not only did Raoden know the proper modifiers this time, but his Aeons had the power of Elantris behind them. With the resurrection of the city, Aeon Dor had regained its legendary strength. Lucel looked down, experimentally bending his leg and feeling where the cut had been.
You know, you could have left a scar. I had to go through an awful lot to get that wound. You should have seen how courageous I was. My grandchildren are going to be disappointed that I don't have any scars to show them.
They'll live.
What's wrong with you? I thought we won!
We won.
but I failed. They had searched the city. There was no sign of Sereni, Dilov, or Hraithen. Raoden had captured a straggling Dorethi soldier and demanded to know where they were, but the man had pled ignorance, and Raoden had released him with disgust. He brooded, watching the people celebrate. Despite the deaths, despite the near-complete destruction of Kaidi, they were happy. Fjordan had been cast out, and Elantris had returned. The days of the gods had come again. Unfortunately, Raoden couldn't enjoy the sweetness of his victory. Not without Sereni. Gelidon approached slowly, ambling away from the group of Elantrians. The mass of silver-skinned people were, for the most part, disoriented. Many of them had been Hoeed for years, and knew nothing of current events.
They're going to be needing our...
And Lord Raoden!
Aishi!
Your Majesty, Asean just spoke with me. The princess, she is entailed, my lord. My kingdom is under attack as well.
Heod? How in Domai's name did she get there?
Sereni backed away, wishing desperately for a weapon. The townspeople noticed Dilof and his warriors, and seeing the Fjordel's odd, twisted bodies and malevolent eyes, scattered in fright. Sereni's reflexes urged her to join them, but such a move would only put her directly in Dilof's hands. The small monk's warriors quickly fanned out to cut off Sereni's escape. Dilof approached, his face stained with drying blood, his bare torso sweating in Teod's cold air, the intricate patterns beneath the skin on his arms and chest bulging, his lips curved in a wicked smile. Sereni knew that this man was the most horrifying thing she would ever see. Raoden climbed to the top of Elantris' wall, taking the steps two at a time, his restored Elantrian muscles moving more quickly and tirelessly than even those of his pre-Shea itself.
Sul!
Gelidon rushed up behind him. Raoden topped the wall, pushing his way through the crowds of people who stood looking over the remains of Kaidi, continuing until he stood on the northern wall, which overlooked the broad blue sea of Fjordan. On the other side of those waters lay Teod and Sereni.
Show me the exact direction Teod's capital is from this point.
Aishi hovered for a moment, then moved to a spot in front of Raoden, marking a point on the horizon.
If you wanted to sail to Teod, my lord, you would go in this direction.
Raoden nodded, trusting the Saeon's innate sense of direction. He began to draw. He constructed Aeon Taye with frantic hands, his fingers tracing patterns he had learned by heart, never thinking they would do any good.
Sul! Sul, what is going on? Dolokin, Raoden, you don't know what you're doing.
I am going to Teod.
But Sul, you yourself told me how dangerous Aeon Taye can be. What was it you said? If you don't know the exact distance you need to travel, you could be killed. You can't go into this blind, Kolo.
It's the only way, Gelidon. I have to at least try.
Sul, a meaningless attempt won't prove anything but your stupidity. Do you even know how far it is to Teod?
Raoden's hand fell slowly to his side. He was no geographer. He knew Teod was about 4 days' sail, but he had no practical knowledge of how many miles or feet that was. He had to work a frame of reference into Aeon Taye, give it some sort of measurement so that it knew how far to send him. Gelidon nodded, clapping Raoden on the shoulder.
Prepare a ship!
It will be too late! What good is power? What good is Elantris if I can't use it to protect the one I love?
1,327,042!
Raoden turned with surprise. Adian stood a short distance away, his skin shining with a silvery Elantrian glow. His eyes betrayed none of the mental retardation that had cursed him since birth. Instead, they stared lucidly ahead.
Adian! You're...
I feel like my entire life has been a dream, Raoden. I remember everything that happened, but I couldn't interact. I couldn't say anything. But that's changed. But one thing remains the same. My mind. I've always been able to figure numbers.
Footsteps.
1,327,042. That is how many steps it is to Teod. Measure my stride and use that as your unit.
Hurry, my lord. She is in danger. Amaya, he's watching the princess now. He says she's surrounded. Wrong. Don't I hurry?
Raoden drew a line in his aeon that duplicated the length of the boy's stride.
1,326,805. That will take you to the docks. I'm not sure how I know that. I went there once as a child.
It'll have to be enough.
Raoden reached up and wrote a modifier beside his aeon, telling it to transport him 1,326,805 lengths of the line.
Sure, this is insane.
Raoden looked at his friend, nodded in agreement, then with a broad stroke, drew the chasm line across his aeon.
You are in charge of Aerilon until I return, my friend.